Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever really paused to consider what it genuinely takes to run one of the largest automotive retail empires in America? I mean, beyond the shiny showrooms and the act of simply selling cars, what are the hidden profit engines, the intricate strategic plays, and the monumental challenges they confront in an industry that's shifting beneath their feet almost daily? Today, we're taking a deep dive into Sonic Automotive, Inc., ticker symbol SAH. It's a Fortune 500 company that, as you'll soon discover, is far more complex and, well, strategically layered than just a chain of car dealerships. Our mission here for you is to really dissect a comprehensive investment analysis you've shared with us. We're pulling out the crucial insights, the truly surprising facts, and the big questions about its multifaceted business model, its financial health, and its compelling future prospects. Think of this as your shortcut to being truly well-informed about a giant that's not just surviving, but, you know, actively evolving in the automotive retail landscape.
Yeah, and what's truly fascinating about Sonic Automotive is that it's not simply about moving vehicles, not at all. It's really a masterclass in strategic diversification within an incredibly dynamic and, let's be honest, often volatile industry. Throughout this deep dive, we'll be exploring precisely how they meticulously balance their bedrock, their traditional dealership operations, with innovative, sometimes disruptive, new ventures. And we'll also uncover why certain parts of their expansive business are demonstrably far more profitable than others. It's quite revealing. This isn't just about the numbers, it's a look at the strategic nuances, you know. From their heavy reliance on high-margin services to their ambitious foray into the used vehicle market with a completely distinct brand, you'll gain insight into how they're not just reacting to, but actively navigating, an industry that's consolidating rapidly and facing, well, unprecedented disruption from direct-to-consumer models and online platforms.
So, to really get to the heart of Sonic, to understand how this massive enterprise functions, we absolutely have to start with its foundation. It's a significant player, undoubtedly one of the biggest automotive retailers in the U.S. Huge. But what does that actually translate to on the ground? Like, how are they structured, and what are the different, seemingly disparate pieces of this very large and diverse puzzle that allow them to operate at such a scale?
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, their complex operating structure is absolutely central to their grand ambition, which is, and they state this, to become the most valuable, diversified automotive retail and service brand in America. Hmm. They aren't just saying that. They've physically built this ambitious goal on three distinct and carefully positioned pillars. As of late 2024, they were operating a total of 141 stores across these segments, each one with its own specific focus, its own operational model, and importantly, its own strategic role within the overall enterprise. It's a delicate balancing act, really. Distinct business models under one corporate umbrella.
Three pillars. Okay. Let's break those down. What's the first one?
Okay. So let's precisely break down those three core segments. First, and paramount, is their franchised dealerships segment. This is undeniably their foundational, their core, their primary revenue engine, no question. It accounted for a massive 83.9% of their total revenue in 2024. So, you know, overwhelmingly dominant financially.
84%? Rough luck.
Exactly. As of mid-2025, this segment operated an impressive 111 physical store locations, which collectively encompass 136 new vehicle franchises representing a diverse portfolio of brands, everything from luxury imports to popular domestic marks. And in addition to vehicle sales, this segment also includes 16 dedicated collision repair centers, adding another layer to their service offerings.
Okay, so sales and collision repair.
Right. But this segment offers a truly comprehensive suite of services. It encompasses the obvious, the sales of brand new vehicles directly from the manufacturer, and also the sales of used vehicles, which are, you know, traded in or acquired elsewhere. But here's the crucial part and where the real leverage lies.
Yeah.
It also includes their high-margin fixed operations.
Fixed operations. Yeah. That's the industry term.
Yeah, for those unfamiliar, fixed operations is the industry term for the sale of parts, the provision of maintenance services, and the extensive work done in collision repair. Think oil changes, brake jobs, complex engine diagnostics, body work after an accident, all that stuff.
Got it. The service side.
Exactly. And finally, they meticulously arrange finance and insurance, or F&I, products for customers. This includes things like extended warranties, service contracts, gap insurance, you know the drill, all adding another vital and highly profitable revenue stream. This comprehensive approach is precisely where a significant portion of their actual profit is generated. It's far beyond just the initial vehicle sale.
Okay, that's the big traditional piece. And then they have something called Echo Park. This really doesn't feel like just another car dealership, does it? This seems like a very different strategic play, almost a, Well, a departure from their traditional model. What was the thinking behind creating this separate brand?
You're absolutely right. It is a very distinct approach. The Echo Park segment is Sonic's strategic and unique brand. It's specifically designed to capture a significant share of the used vehicle specialty retail market. It represents a deliberate, calculated entry into a segment that operates with a, well, fundamentally different philosophy and business model compared to their traditional franchise dealerships.
A whole separate focus.
Right. In 2024, Echo Park accounted for approximately 15.0% of Sonic's total revenue, which, while smaller than the franchise segment, still makes it a substantial and strategically vital part of their diversified portfolio.
15%. Okay. Still pretty big.
Definitely. As of mid-2025, Echo Park had expanded its footprint to 18 stores spread across 10 different states, demonstrating its growing national presence. Their focus is incredibly specific, almost laser-like. They primarily sell 1 to 4-year-old pre-owned vehicles. They're aiming for that sweet spot in terms of value and condition. And similar to the franchise stores, they arrange F&I products for their customers, adding that profitable layer to the transaction.
Right, F&I again.
But here's a crucial operational distinction, and it goes to your point about it being different. Echo Park's fixed operations are internal reconditioning only.
Internal only. What does that mean exactly?
It means they meticulously service and recondition the vehicles they intend to sell themselves, making sure they meet their rigorous standards before they hit the sales lot. But they do not offer customer-facing service or maintenance work.
Ah, okay. So no oil changes for customers at Echo Park.
Correct. That's a key difference from their franchise dealerships. This allows Echo Park to focus entirely on the sales process and inventory turnover, streamlining their operations significantly.
Okay, so you've got the massive traditional dealership business with all its bells and whistles, then this specialized, streamlined used car brand in Echo Park, and then there's a third, seemingly smaller, but still growing piece of the puzzle. The power sports segment.
Correct. The power sports segment represents their niche diversification. It's currently the smallest contributor, accounting for about 1.1% of total revenue in 2024, but it's a strategically growing area for them.
Just over 1%, so quite small compared to the others.
For now, yes. As of mid-2025, this segment had expanded to 14 locations across 3 states, suggesting a deliberate effort to build out this specialized vertical. Here, they're tapping into a different consumer market, offering sales of both new and used power sports vehicles. That includes everything from motorcycles and ATVs to personal watercraft, you know, jet skis and the like.
Okay, fun stuff.
Exactly. And just like their other segments, they provide the related fixed operations for service and repair of these specialized vehicles, along with F&I product arrangements. It's a smart move, I think, tapping into a distinct, specialized market with its own unique growth dynamics and customer base. It further diversifies their revenue streams beyond just cars and trucks.
It sounds like they're juggling quite a bit, right? You've got this deeply ingrained, mature, often premium retail model with the franchise dealerships, then a tech-driven, high-volume, and very specific sales model with Echo Park, and now this specialized power sports niche. From a management perspective, that sounds incredibly complex. What does that mean for how they actually run the company day-to-day, and what kind of challenges do they face in managing all these distinct operations?
Well, this immediately raises a vital question. How do you effectively manage such distinct and, frankly, often divergent operational models, even with the benefit of shared corporate functions like IT, HR, and finance? It's tough. The source we looked at highlights that this multi-segment structure inherently creates a significant management challenge, and it introduces a notable layer of execution risk.
Execution risk, meaning things could go wrong trying to do too much.
Precisely. And we've seen very clear evidence of this quite recently. They took a substantial impairment charge, basically a write-down of asset value. And it was largely, though not exclusively, tied to the Echo Park segment's strategic realignment and some underperforming locations.
Ah, so the Echo Park growing pains hit the books.
Exactly. This impairment is essentially an accounting recognition where the company had to write down the value of some of its assets, particularly within Echo Park, because those assets were just not performing to their prior expected financial returns. It underscores the inherent difficulty and the very real financial risk in trying to scale multiple fundamentally different business models simultaneously within a single corporate structure. It requires extremely sophisticated oversight and the ability to pivot strategies when necessary, which, to their credit, they clearly did with Echo Park.
Here's where it gets really interesting, and it's a critical insight for anyone looking at automotive retail. You might intuitively think selling cars is where the big money is for a company like Sonic, right? That's what they're known for, the thousands of vehicles they move. But the numbers, when you dig into them, tell a dramatically different and somewhat surprising story about Sonic's actual profit drivers. Where's the real financial engine, the hidden powerhouse, truly located within their business?
Okay, prepare yourself. Here's the bombshell, and it's absolutely fundamental to understanding automotive retail profitability. For Sonic, selling the car itself is almost like a customer acquisition cost. It gets the customer in the door.
Just get them in the door.
Pretty much. The real wealth, the true profit engine that drives their bottom line, isn't primarily in moving vehicles off the lot. It's in what happens after the initial sale, during the long life cycle of car ownership. An analysis of their 2024 financial mix vividly reveals this critical dynamic. While new and used vehicle sales combined generated a substantial 82% of Sonic's total revenues, with new vehicles making up 46% and used vehicles 36%.
Okay, the vast majority of revenue.
Right, but these sales contributed a comparatively paltry 26% of the company's total gross profit.
Only 26%?
Yep. Specifically, only 18% from new vehicle sales and just 8% from used vehicle sales contributed to that gross profit. Now compare that in stark contrast to their back-end operations, fixed operations like service and parts and finance and insurance. Together, these made up only a mere 18% of total revenues, 13% from fixed ops, and 5% from F&I.
Much smaller slice of the revenue pie.
Much smaller.
Yeah.
Yet despite their smaller revenue share, these segments generated a commanding 74% of the company's total gross profit.
74%? That's
great.
That's incredible.
It is. To break that down further, fixed operations alone contributed 42% of the gross profit, and F&I brought in a significant 32%. This isn't just a nuance, it's the core truth of the business. Vehicle sales act as the crucial customer acquisition engine, feeding the far more lucrative recurring revenue streams derived from ongoing service, parts sales, and arranging financing and insurance products. This back-end stability and the high-margin nature of fixed operations and F&I provide a crucial, durable buffer against the inherent cyclicality and margin pressure that often define new and used vehicle sales, which can be, you know, quite volatile.
So it's not just about moving cars off the lot quickly. It's about getting those customers into the service bay for routine maintenance and repairs and signing them up for extended warranties or financing. That's the real powerhouse that fuels the entire operation. That is a crucial takeaway.
Yeah.
Speaking of moving cars and customer acquisition, where are they focusing all this activity geographically? Is Sonic's massive footprint spread evenly across the country? Or are there specific hotbeds, particular states or regions, where their operations are highly concentrated?
Well, while their franchise dealerships span 18 states, their revenue generation is in fact highly concentrated geographically. Very much so. In 2024, Texas and California, two of the largest and, you know, most economically significant states in the U.S., together accounted for over 51% of their total revenue.
Over half from just two states.
Over half. Texas alone contributed 27.3%, and California a significant 23.8%. This deep penetration in major markets certainly offers the advantage of scale and local market dominance, but it also comes with the inherent risk of heightened exposure to regional economic downturns, adverse regulatory changes, or even natural disasters specifically within those states.
Right. If California sneezes, Sonic could catch a cold.
That's a good way to put it. A severe economic slowdown in California could disproportionately impact Sonic's overall performance. What's even more fascinating here is their strategic weighting within their franchise portfolio. In 2024, an impressive 86% of new vehicle revenue in their franchise dealership segment came from luxury and premium import categories.
86% luxury and premium, that's huge concentration.
It really is. This segment is significantly led by top-tier German brands, with BMW accounting for a quarter, 25%, and Mercedes-Benz representing 14% of their new vehicle revenue. Furthermore, their recent strategic acquisition of four dealerships in California has propelled them to become the largest Jaguar Land Rover retailer in the U.S. by sales volume.
Doubling down on luxury, it seems.
Absolutely. This deliberate and heavy focus on the luxury market is a key differentiator from many peers who might have a more diversified mix across mass market brands. Luxury brands typically command higher gross profit per unit. They cultivate a more affluent and loyal customer base. And importantly, they generate more stable and consistently profitable fixed operations revenue because these customers tend to be less price sensitive and more likely to use authorized dealer service centers.
Makes sense. More money spent on service?
Exactly. This customer demographic also tends to be more resilient during periods of economic stress compared to the broader mass market segment. However, this strategy also creates significant dependency on the product cycles, the brand health, and the production capabilities of a relatively concentrated group of high-end manufacturers, which, you know, introduces its own set of risks.
The auto industry isn't exactly static, is it? We've seen so much incredible change in the last few years, from supply chain chaos that scrambled everything to the rapid emergence of new technologies like EVs and evolving consumer preferences for how they want to buy cars. How is Sonic navigating these broader currents and positioning itself within such a dynamic, almost chaotic landscape?
Yeah, it's a whirlwind. And this immediately raises an important question for any company in this sector. How does Sonic effectively position itself within a U.S. automotive retail industry that's truly undergoing significant, even revolutionary, structural changes? From overarching macroeconomic trends to profound digital disruption, it's a lot. The period from 2024 into 2025 has been characterized by a necessary normalization of market conditions after the, well, unprecedented disruptions caused by the pandemic era.
Things settling down a bit.
Sort of. We've seen inventory levels largely recover from those severe shortages that inflated prices, which is naturally leading to an increase in manufacturer incentives. You're seeing more deals again, and a moderation of those record high vehicle transaction prices we saw in 2022 and 2023. However, the road ahead isn't without significant headwinds. The higher interest rate environment we're experiencing continues to negatively impact vehicle affordability for consumers.
Making car payments tougher.
Exactly, pushing them towards longer loan terms to manage monthly payments. This also, critically, increases floor plan financing costs for dealers. That's the cost they incur to hold inventory on their lots.
Ah, right. Costs them more just to have the cars sitting there.
Precisely. Simultaneously, the industry is unequivocally embracing a significant technological transformation. Dealerships are increasingly leveraging advanced tools like artificial intelligence and machine learning to optimize every facet of their operations, from sophisticated inventory management and dynamic pricing strategies to highly personalized marketing efforts. This ongoing technological arms race, frankly, overwhelmingly favors larger, well-capitalized players like Sonic. They possess the financial capacity and organizational expertise to invest heavily in these sophisticated platforms and integrate them effectively.
It also feels like we're seeing a lot of consolidation happening in this industry, like big groups getting bigger. It's not just a landscape of small, independent mom-and-pop shops anymore. Is that right?
Yeah.
How is that playing out across the U.S., and where does Sonic, as a major player, fit into that rapidly consolidating picture?
Indeed, the U.S. automotive retail landscape, despite the changes, remains highly fragmented compared to other retail sectors, which continues to make it a fertile environment for strategic consolidation. And the pace of mergers and acquisitions in this space has genuinely accelerated to record levels. In 2024 alone, the U.S. auto dealership buy-sell market reached a new benchmark with 438 completed transactions. That's a robust 10% increase over the prior year's record.
438 deals in 1 year. That's a lot of dealerships changing hands.
It is. And if you look at the broader sweep, over the past 3.5 years, an astonishing more than 2,000 dealerships have changed hands. That's a rate nearly double the historical average, signifying a fundamental shift in ownership. This rapid consolidation is primarily being driven by large private equity-backed groups and publicly traded dealership behemoths, exactly like Sonic. They're aggressively seeking to build regional dominance, achieve greater economies of scale, and extract operational efficiencies.
The big guys are gobbling up the smaller ones.
Just essentially, yes. The concentration of power is quite evident. The top 150 dealership groups in the U.S. now account for over 30% of the industry's total revenue, a substantial share. What's particularly fascinating within this trend is a clear phenomenon of franchise bifurcation, basically a divergence in value.
Bifurcation, meaning some brands are worth way more than others.
Exactly. High-performing, highly desirable brands such as Toyota, Lexus, and BMW continue to command very high valuations. They're eagerly sought after in acquisitions, almost seen as recession-proof assets. Conversely, weaker, often underperforming franchises like Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, or Nissan have seen their valuations decline sharply amid struggles with excess inventory and falling profitability.
So there are haves and have-nots among the car brands themselves.
Definitely. And Sonic's recent acquisition of those four Jaguar Land Rover dealerships perfectly exemplifies and aligns with this strategy of acquiring premium, high-performing franchises in key luxury markets. This allows them to strengthen their position among the have side of this market bifurcation, potentially insulating them from the valuation pressures affecting dealers with a heavier mix of struggling brands. However, this relentless pace of consolidation by well-capitalized competitors also creates continuous pressure on Sonic to remain disciplined, identify, and execute execute strategic acquisitions to maintain and grow its market share. It's a perpetual race for scale.
This is a huge game-changing trend that affects so many industries, not just cars. The idea of buying a car online, or even directly from the manufacturer, that sounds like a massive, almost existential threat to traditional dealerships. How is this digital disruption playing out specifically in automotive retail?
And what is Sonic's strategic answer to what could be a foundational shift in how cars are sold?
You've hit on one of the most significant long-term structural threats to the traditional franchise dealership model: the rise of digital retail and direct-to-consumer sales. The global automotive e-commerce market is not just growing, it's forecast to surge. A compound annual growth rate of 16.7% between 2025 and 2032. And the online car buying market itself is projected to exceed a staggering $850 billion by 2032.
$850 billion online. That's just enormous. It's transformative. This long-term structural threat primarily emanates from two powerful forces. First, direct-to-consumer, or DTC, models. Tesla famously pioneered this approach, completely bypassing the traditional dealership network with a transparent, fixed-price, online purchasing experience. This model, with its perceived simplicity and transparency, resonates incredibly strongly with a growing segment of consumers, particularly younger demographics, who are comfortable with digital-first transactions.
Right. Younger buyers expect to do everything online.
Exactly. While many legacy automakers are currently constrained by state franchise laws, which for now provide a significant regulatory moat for incumbents like Sonic, they are actively exploring and even lobbying to adopt DTC principles, especially for their new electric vehicle EV brands. These state-level franchise laws, while protective, are certainly facing increasing legal and political scrutiny, signaling a potential future shift.
So those laws might not protect dealerships forever.
It's definitely a risk factor. The second force comes from online vehicle sales platforms, pure-play digital entities like Carvana and Vroom. They've built entire businesses centered on purely online transactions, fundamentally challenging the traditional role of the physical dealership as the primary point of sale. Sonic's strategic response to this pervasive digital disruption is multifaceted and incredibly telling. Their EchoPark brand, with its strong emphasis on an omni-channel approach, a low-hassle experience, and transparent pricing, is a direct effort to compete with the value proposition of these digital disruptors.
So EchoPark is their answer to Carvana?
In a way, yes. In essence, EchoPark serves as an internal laboratory for Sonic to develop, refine, and scale the capabilities and processes needed to thrive in a more digitally-centric retail environment. It's their proactive answer to evolving consumer preferences for a more streamlined, transparent, and convenient buying experience, whether online, in-store, or, you know, a blend of both.
So given all this rapid consolidation, the digital disruption, and the shifting landscape, how does Sonic stack up against its biggest rivals in this transforming market? Are they leading the pack in certain areas, or are they playing catch-up perhaps in terms of overall scale or specific segments?
Well, Sonic is undoubtedly a significant player in the U.S. automotive retail market, consistently ranking among the top five. Huge presence. However, it competes against several larger, publicly traded dealership groups, each with its own unique strengths. For instance, AutoNation, AN, is one of the largest U.S. retailers by volume, operating over 240 stores and holding 325 franchises across distinct segments for domestic, import, and premium luxury brands. AutoNation also boasts its own captive finance arm, AutoNation Finance, which provides it with greater control over a key profit center.
Having our own bank, essentially.
Pretty much. Then you have Group 1 Automotive, GPI, which differentiates itself with a significant international footprint. They operate 144 dealerships in the U.S. and an additional 55 in the United Kingdom, providing geographic diversification beyond just North America.
Spreading their bets globally.
Right. And finally, Penske Automotive Group, Pezege, is arguably the most diversified of the major public groups. Its operations extend beyond retail automotive dealerships across the U.S., Europe, and Australia to include a substantial retail commercial truck dealership business and a significant 28.9% ownership stake in Penske Transportation Solutions, a full-service logistics company. So much broader than just selling cars.
Wow. Penske's into trucks and logistics, too.
Yeah, very diversified. Relative to these formidable peers, Sonic Automotive is generally smaller in overall scale, but it distinguishes itself through a more focused business strategy. Its key points of differentiation are its heavy concentration in the premium luxury vehicle segment, particularly brands like BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and now Jaguar Land Rover, and its unique standalone used car brand, EchoPark.
That EchoPark brand really is unique among the big players, isn't it?
It is. While its major competitors largely integrate used vehicle sales within their existing franchise dealership banners, Sonic is attempting to build a completely separate, nationally recognized brand with EchoPark. This approach certainly carries higher execution risk and demands greater capital investment for brand building and separate infrastructure. But it offers the potential for a greater long-term reward if the EchoPark brand can truly achieve national scale and sustained profitability, becoming a dominant player in the used vehicle space. It's a big bet.
All right, let's get down to the numbers, because ultimately financial performance tells the real story. How has Sonic been performing financially, especially given all these market changes and strategic shifts we've been discussing? Are they making money, and how robust is their balance sheet in navigating these dynamic conditions?
What's truly fascinating here is that Sonic's financial performance over the past few years reflects a very unique period, a real roller coaster. We saw an unprecedented expansion of profit margins during the acute supply shortages that defined the pandemic era, followed by a necessary and quite rapid normalization of those conditions. And, quite recently, a significant strategic realignment introduced a substantial non-cash charge that, on the surface, might mask some underlying operational strength.
A charge that makes the numbers look worse than the core business actually is.
Potentially, yes. If we look at their historical performance from 2019 to 2024, the pandemic-induced supply chain disruptions, particularly between 2020 and 2022, led to severe new vehicle shortages across the industry. This extreme imbalance between supply and demand allowed dealers, including Sonic, to command record-high gross profits per vehicle, leading to an extraordinary surge in overall profitability.
The good old days for car dealers, maybe not for buyers.
You could say that. As supply chains have steadily normalized from 2023 onwards, inventory levels have risen, manufacturer incentives have returned to entice buyers, and vehicle margins have consequently compressed back towards their more historical norms. To give you a tangible sense of this, their total revenues peaked around $14.39 billion in 2022. Gross profit hit its zenith at $2.31 billion in that same year.
Peak performance in 22.
Right. Then you observe a moderation in 2023 and 2024, with revenues at $14 billion and $14.37 billion, respectively, and gross profit at $2.25 billion and $2.20 billion. Operating income and net income followed a similar peak and moderate trend, vividly illustrating just how much those unique temporary market conditions impacted their top and bottom lines during that extraordinary period.
That makes perfect sense. It really was an unusual and perhaps unrepeatable time for car sales with those inflated margins. But let's zoom in on their very recent performance, specifically the second quarter of 2025. What do the latest numbers tell us about Sonic's current financial health and its trajectory, especially given that strategic realignment you mentioned?
Okay. The company's most recent financial results for the second quarter of 2025 truly highlight the complexity of its current situation and its strategic pivot. They reported healthy top-line growth, with total revenues for Q2 2025 increasing by a solid 6% year-over-year to $3.66 billion, which certainly demonstrates continued commercial momentum.
Okay, revenue up 6%. That sounds good.
It does. However, despite this revenue growth, the company reported a GAAP net loss of $45.6 million.
A loss. After growing revenue, how does that happen?
Right. This is a sharp and notable reversal from the $41.2 million in net income they recorded in the same period of 2024. This net loss was predominantly driven by a very significant $172.4 million non-cash pre-tax impairment charge related to franchise assets, which was recognized during the quarter.
That impairment charge again. So that's the culprit.
That's the main driver of the GAAP loss. This charge effectively represents a downward revision of the expected future cash flows from certain assets, most likely linked to the strategic restructuring, the closure of underperforming stores, and the general recalibration within the EchoPark segment. This raises an important question for us. Why would a company report a loss when its core business is showing robust performance? It tells us that the company is proactively taking a significant hit now on its accounting books. To fully account for past strategic missteps and to realign its asset values for future profitability, particularly with EchoPark.
Cleaning house, essentially.
Exactly. It's a forward-looking adjustment designed to clean up the balance sheet and set a more realistic and sustainable foundation for future earnings. And critically, when you exclude this non-cash impairment charge and other one-time items, the company's underlying operational performance was actually quite strong. Adjusted or non-GAAP earnings per share for Q2 2025 was $2.19, which represents a substantial 49% increase from the prior year period.
49% adjusted EPS growth. That's huge.
It really is. This really indicates the robust health and strong performance from their core operations when those one-time non-cash accounting adjustments are excluded. For you, the listener, this means understanding the quality of the earnings, not just the headline number. You have to look under the hood.
So it's not just about selling a lot of cars anymore. It's about what happens after the initial sale, in the service bay, and in the financing office that truly drives the bottom line. Is a crucial takeaway for anyone looking at automotive retail, and it's clearly and powerfully demonstrated in Sonic's Q2 2025 numbers. It fundamentally redefines where the true value lies.
Absolutely. The profitability analysis by segment for Q2 2025 vividly reinforces the strategic emphasis. We saw vehicle margins normalizing, confirming broader industry trends. New vehicle gross profit per unit, or GPU, declined 6% year-over-year to $3,391, while used vehicle GPU rose a modest 3% to $1,590 up. This confirms those industry-wide trends of increased inventory and heightened pricing competition impacting vehicle sales margins.
Oh, less profit per car sold, generally.
Generally, yes, compared to the peak. But as you highlighted, the strength in fixed operations and F&I is what truly stands out as the core profit engine. These high-margin segments were the undeniable profit powerhouses. Same-store fixed operations gross profit grew a robust 12%, with the gross margin expanding by 90 basis points to an impressive 51.3%.
12% growth in service profit. Nice.
Very strong. This indicates both volume growth and excellent cost management in their service centers. Even more impressively, same-store F&I GPU surged an incredible 14% to a record $2,718 per vehicle.
14% growth in F&I per car. How do they manage that?
Well, the company attributed this particularly strong performance in F&I to successful renegotiations of contracts with its F&I product vendors, allowing them to capture more of the value. This is precisely why those back-end operations, service, parts, and financing are so critical to the overall health, stability, and enduring profitability of an automotive retailer like Sonic. They provide a high-margin, less cyclical revenue stream that offsets the more volatile and lower-margin vehicle sales.
And looking at their overall financial health, how strong is their balance sheet and their cash flow? Do they have enough financial flexibility and firepower to make these big strategic moves and acquisitions we've been talking about, like the JLR dealerships, without straining their core operations?
Yeah, that's key. Sonic demonstrably maintains a solid and highly flexible liquidity position, which is absolutely essential for managing a capital-intensive business like automotive retail, where large inventories need to be financed. As of June 30, 2025, the company reported approximately $210 million in cash and floor plan deposits and a robust total available liquidity of around $775
million. $775 million available. That's a good cushion.
It provides significant flexibility. And this financial flexibility was clearly demonstrated by their ability to fund the significant $360 million acquisition of those four Jaguar Land Rover dealerships primarily with cash on hand, rather than relying heavily on new dilutive debt issuance for that particular deal. This speaks to strong internal cash generation and prudent financial management.
Paid cash for the $360 million deal. Impressive.
It is. Their inventory management also appears quite disciplined, which is crucial in a volatile market. At the end of Q2 2025, the franchise dealership segment held a 54-day supply of new vehicles and a lean 35-day supply of used vehicles.
Keeping inventory tight. Why is that so important?
Well, maintaining lean inventory levels is key. It helps mitigate the risk of vehicle value depreciation in a volatile market, especially as prices normalize. And it significantly reduces carrying costs, which is particularly important with rising interest rates. Less cash tied up. Now, if we connect this to the bigger picture, how does Sonic's overall profitability and financial efficiency stack up against its closest public competitors, like AutoNation, Group One, and Penske? When we compare key financial ratios on a trailing 12-month basis, we certainly see some interesting distinctions that highlight Sonic's unique positioning. Sonic's gross margin stood at 15.56%, its operating margin at 3.24%, and its net profit margin at 1.52%. Their return on equity was 15.99%.
How does that compare? Are those numbers good or bad relative to the others?
Compared to its larger peers, Sonic's operating and net profit margins, as well as its return on equity, generally trail. For example, AutoNation's operating margin was 5.07%, and Group One's was 4.53%, so noticeably higher.
So they're a bit less profitable on the bottom line than the bigger guys?
On these metrics, yes. This could be attributed to a number of factors, potentially lower economies of scale compared to much larger, more diversified players, and critically, the dilutive effect of the Echo Park segment's past unprofitability and its ongoing investment phase. That drags down the overall average. Different capital structures among these companies also play a role in these comparative figures. It tells you that while Sonic is a significant player with strong core operations, there's still room for margin improvement, particularly as Echo Park continues its journey towards sustained high-level profitability and scale.
So even with that nuance, they seem to be managing their finances well. With all these moving parts and market changes, the consolidation, the digital shift, what's Sonic's actual plan for the future? How are they looking to grow in such a dynamic and competitive environment? What does their roadmap for navigating this evolving automotive landscape look like?
Right, the strategy. Their growth strategy is decidedly multi-pronged, combining significant targeted acquisitions with ambitious organic growth initiatives, particularly within the Echo Park segment, all while investing heavily and continuously in digital capabilities. First, let's delve into their acquisition-led growth. The company's stated long-term strategy explicitly focuses on acquiring desirable businesses in attractive, often high-growth markets.
Buying their way to growth, partly.
Partly, yes, and strategically. This approach was recently exemplified by that landmark Jaguar Land Rover, JLR, acquisition in June 2025. Sonic acquired four high-volume JLR dealerships in prime California markets, specifically Los Angeles, Newport Beach, San Jose, and Pasadena, for approximately $360 million, funded primarily by cash, as we noted, demonstrating their financial strength. This single transaction is not just about adding revenue, it's expected to contribute about $500 million in annualized revenue.
$500 million in revenue from one deal.
Expected, yes.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned, it immediately propelled Sonic to become the largest JLR retail group in the U.S. by sales volume. This acquisition is a strategic deepening of their commitment to the high-margin luxury segment. By gaining significant scale in a premier brand within a key luxury market, Sonic can achieve greater leverage with the manufacturer, potentially securing better inventory allocation and support. It also allows them to realize operational efficiencies through shared resources and, crucially, to capture a highly lucrative customer base for its high-margin fixed operations and F&I segments. Luxury car owners tend to spend more on service.
Right, feeding that profit engine again.
Exactly. They've also been making smaller, targeted tuck-in acquisitions to expand their nascent power sports segment, like the purchases of motorcycles of Charlotte and Greensboro, signaling a strategic commitment to that niche. The key risk associated with this acquisition strategy, of course, lies in the effective and seamless integration of these new businesses. They must truly realize the projected synergies and financial returns and avoid any cultural clashes or operational missteps that can often accompany large-scale mergers. It's not always easy.
Beyond just buying new dealerships and expanding their footprint, what about growing the businesses they already have, the organic growth side? You mentioned Echo Park earlier and that significant impairment charge. This sounds like a real inflection point for that segment. What exactly happened with Echo Park, and what's the new strategy to not just turn it around, but to make it a sustainable, profitable growth engine for Sonic?
Okay, Echo Park. It represents the company's most significant and frankly most volatile organic growth initiative. It's been a fascinating journey to watch. After a period of aggressive, often cash-intensive expansion that unfortunately failed to deliver sustained profitability, the strategy has pivoted sharply and decisively.
They expanded too fast, maybe.
That seems to be the conclusion. They took bold action, closing 7 underperforming Northwest Motorsports stores in early 2024, signaling a clear and dramatic shift in focus from a growth-at-all-costs mentality to a rigorous prioritization of per-unit profitability.
Profit over growth, for now.
For now, yes. This strategic recalibration, while painful in the short term due to the impairment charge, is already yielding truly dramatic and positive results. In Q2 2025, Echo Park's adjusted segment income surged by a remarkable 679% year over year.
679%.
Yeah, a huge jump. And its adjusted EBITDA, a key measure of operational cash flow, hit a record $16.4 million. This is a powerful turnaround. Consequently, management actually raised its full year 2025 EBITDA guidance for the Echo Park segment to $50-$55 million, a significant increase from a prior range of $30-$35 million.
Wow, that's quite a shift. So the turnaround seems to be working.
The early signs are very positive. The critical challenge now for management is to prove that this newfound profitability can be sustained and that they can simultaneously re-accelerate unit volume growth in a disciplined manner. It's a delicate balance, achieving scale without sacrificing profitability. Beyond Echo Park, fixed operations expansion continues to be a consistent, high-margin, and crucial driver of organic growth for the entire company. In Q2 2025, same-store fixed operations gross profit increased by that robust 12%, demonstrating consistent demand for their service.
Keep growing that service business.
Absolutely. Sonic is actively investing to expand capacity in this area, recognizing its long-term value. They added 335 technicians in 2024, a significant investment in human capital. And committed to upgrading facilities like installing air conditioning in 90% of its U.S. service shops by the end of 2025. Better working conditions for techs.
Makes sense. Got to keep good technicians happy.
For sure. And as vehicles become increasingly complex with advanced electronics, and particularly with the advent of electric vehicles, the specialized service provided by franchise dealers becomes an even more critical, defensible, and higher margin profit center. This foresight is crucial for future-proofing a significant portion of their earnings against shifts in the sales market.
That makes perfect sense. Service is clearly a critical moat. But how are they leveraging technology to stay competitive in this increasingly digital world? It seems like every industry is being fundamentally disrupted by tech, and automotive retail should be no different. How does Sonic use technology to enhance the customer experience and drive efficiency?
Right. Sonic views its substantial investment in technology not merely as a necessary expense, but as a core competitive advantage that differentiates them in the market. Their comprehensive digital strategy focuses on fundamentally re-engineering the entire customer journey, aiming to eliminate those long-standing pain points traditionally associated with buying a car.
Like spending all day at the dealership.
Exactly like that. This includes significant in-store technology. They've developed proprietary tech aimed at drastically reducing transaction times to under an hour, making the process faster and more convenient. Their sales associates are rebranded as experience guides who use iPads to work alongside customers, providing transparency and real-time information. Stores also feature Imagine Bars for collaborative research and vehicle configuration, all meticulously designed to create a more transparent, less adversarial, and more engaging environment.
Trying to make it less painful, basically.
That's the goal. But the cornerstone of their broader digital strategy and their direct answer to online disruptors is Echo Park's digital platform. This model was built from the ground up with a true omni-channel philosophy, aiming to empower customers to buy or sell a car however, whenever, and wherever they wanted. The platform seamlessly integrates over 15 different third-party services, from financing applications to trade-in valuations, to create a truly seamless online to in-store experience. It's actually won awards for its user experience and sophisticated digital strategy.
So Echo Park is their tech showcase, in a way.
Very much so. This integrated physical and digital approach is a key component of their competitive defense against the threat from online-only competitors. By significantly improving the in-store process and offering robust, intuitive online capabilities, Sonic aims to create a superior overall value proposition that pure-play e-commerce platforms simply can't fully replicate. They are building a digital moat, leveraging their physical footprint.
So it really sounds like they're trying to achieve two very different, almost opposing things at once. Acquire traditional high-end luxury dealerships and simultaneously build a tech-forward, transparent used car brand in Echo Park. That's a bold move, often referred to as a barbell strategy. What are the broader implications of such an ambitious dual approach?
It is indeed a classic barbell strategy, targeting two distinct and often very different ends of the automotive retail spectrum. This dual-pronged growth strategy, aggressively acquiring traditional high-end luxury dealerships while simultaneously building a disruptive tech-forward used car brand like Echo Park, is exceptionally ambitious and carries inherent complexity.
Trying to win at both ends of the market.
Exactly. Success in the luxury acquisitions depends heavily on traditional retail excellence, fostering deep customer relationships, and providing superior personalized service quality. Old school, in a good way. On the other hand, success in Echo Park depends heavily on technological prowess, sophisticated logistical efficiency for sourcing and reconditioning vehicles, and scalable processes for high-volume used car sales. Very different skill set.
Totally different businesses, almost.
Almost. Executing both of these fundamentally different models simultaneously requires an exceptional level of management focus, disciplined capital allocation, and the ability to adapt different operational playbooks. The potential reward, however, is substantial. Market leadership in these two key but very different segments of the automotive market. Yet the risk of capital misallocation or a diffusion of focused attention on either side of this barbell is equally substantial. It's a high reward but undeniably high risk strategic play that Sonic has committed to.
With all these ambitious plans, acquisitions, and strategic shifts, where is the money coming from and how are they deciding where to put it? What's Sonic's philosophy on fueling all this growth and returning value to its shareholders, especially given that recent GAAP loss?
Right, the capital allocation. Sonic employs a balanced and, importantly, an increasingly shareholder-friendly capital allocation strategy. They are meticulously deploying their cash across three main interlinked areas: strategic acquisitions to expand their footprint and brand portfolio, organic growth investments within their existing operations to enhance efficiency and customer experience, and direct returns to shareholders through dividends and buybacks.
Covering all the bases.
Trying to. Management's recent actions, even in a quarter marked by that significant GAAP loss due to the impairment charge, signal a strong degree of confidence in the company's underlying cash-generating capabilities and future prospects. Their framework and priorities are rooted in pursuing a diversified growth strategy across all three of their segments: franchise dealerships, Echo Park, and Power Sports. This implies that capital is allocated opportunistically based on where management perceives the highest potential for risk-adjusted returns and strategic advantage.
Putting money where they think it'll grow best.
That's the idea. The ability to fund the significant $360 million JLR acquisition primarily from cash on hand demonstrates a disciplined approach to maintaining robust balance sheet strength and liquidity. This financial flexibility is crucial, allowing them to capitalize on such valuable opportunities when they arise without having to resort to dilutive equity raises or high-interest debt. In terms of shareholder returns, Sonic has demonstrated a firm and consistent commitment. They maintain a clear policy of paying a regular quarterly cash dividend. And in a strong signal of confidence that resonated with the market, the board of directors approved a 9% increase in the quarterly dividend to 38 cents per share in July 2025, payable in October.
Raising the dividend by 9% even after posting a loss.
Exactly. This noteworthy increase continues a multi-year trend of dividend growth and powerfully underscores management's positive outlook on future cash flows, despite that reported Q2 2025 net loss due to the impairment charge. It's a statement that their core business is performing well and generating sufficient cash.
Actions speak louder than accounting charges, maybe.
You could interpret it that way. Additionally, Sonic actively utilizes a share repurchase program to enhance shareholder value and optimize their capital structure. During the first 6 months of 2025, the company repurchased approximately 0.7 million shares for a total of $44.1 million. As of June 30, 2025, approximately $208.2 million remained authorized under its current share repurchase program, providing significant capacity for future buybacks, which can be a strong signal of undervalued stock.
This really tells you a lot about management's confidence, doesn't it? Even with a substantial impairment charge affecting the headline net income, they're still raising dividends and buying back shares. It's a very strong, unequivocal signal to the market.
Absolutely. It's a clear vote of confidence, demonstrating belief in their long-term strategy and cash flow generation. Now, regarding their capital structure and debt management, like its peers, Sonic operates with a capital-intensive business model that inherently relies on significant leverage. This debt is primarily for vehicle inventory financing, which is known as floor plan financing.
Right, the debt tied to the cars on the lot.
Exactly. Their reported debt-to-equity ratio, while high at 389.5% in Q2 2025, must be interpreted within the specific context of the auto retail industry. Think of it like a grocery store having debt tied to all the bananas, milk, and fresh produce on its shelves.
Okay, working capital, essentially.
Pretty much. It's floor plan financing, essentially a short-term revolving credit line secured by the very cars they have in inventory. It's a fundamental and necessary part of the daily business model, almost like an operating expense rather than a traditional long-term loan. And it's backed by highly liquid assets that can be quickly converted to cash. So while it's a high number, it's not signaling a company drowning in long-term unsecured debt. It's how they fuel their daily operations and manage inventory.
So that high debt ratio isn't as scary as it sounds.
Not necessarily given the context. The real measure of their financial health lies more in their non-vehicle debt and their ability to service all their interest payments, which they appear to be managing effectively with their strong liquidity position. As of June 30, 2025, the company reported that strong liquidity position of approximately $775 million, which provides ample buffer. Also, their in-house finance department plays a key strategic role in the business model, arranging financing for customers across the credit spectrum. And this is a major contributor to that highly profitable F&I segment we discussed earlier, reinforcing the overall financial health. Finally, a key measure of how efficiently a company is deploying its capital to generate profits is return on invested capital, or ROIC.
ROIC, how are they doing there?
According to available third-party calculations, Sonic Automotive's trailing 12-month ROIC is approximately 9.63%, while its weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, is estimated at 7.17%.
Okay, so ROIC is higher than WACC. That's good,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, that's exactly what you want to see. The fact that the company's ROIC exceeds its WACC indicates that it is currently generating returns in excess of its cost of capital, meaning it is creating economic value for shareholders. Tracking the trajectory of ROIC will be absolutely crucial for assessing the long-term success of its significant capital deployments, like the JLR acquisition and the ongoing investments in the EchoPark platform.
Even with robust strategies and a clear roadmap, the market inevitably throws curveballs. What have been some of the toughest challenges Sonic has faced recently, especially in the last 2 years? And how have they navigated those significant bumps in the road beyond just the EchoPark realignment?
You're right. No business operates in a vacuum, and the past couple of years have presented significant hurdles. The entire automotive retail sector, including Sonic, has navigated a complex and exceptionally challenging operating environment. This period has been marked by significant operational disruptions, persistent macroeconomic pressures, and noticeable shifts in consumer behavior. The most acute and widely publicized recent challenge was certainly the CDK global cyber attack.
Oh yeah, that was huge news in the industry. What happened there, and how did it directly affect Sonic's sprawling operations?
Well, the cyber attack on CDK Global in June 2024, which provides the critical dealer management system, or DMS, for thousands of dealerships across North America, caused a widespread and prolonged system outage. Sonic was particularly vulnerable, relying on CDK's DMS for all of its franchise dealerships, making it a single point of failure.
All their main dealerships used CDK. Ouch.
Big time. The company promptly disclosed that the incident was reasonably likely to have a material impact on its financial performance. Citing a slower rate of vehicle sales during the outage period that began on June 19th and lingered, core dealership functions, from initiating sales and processing financing to scheduling service appointments and managing back office accounting, were severely crippled, forcing a stressful and inefficient return to manual paper-based processes. Imagine trying to sell cars with pen and paper again.
Nightmare fuel for a modern dealership.
Absolutely. While the full long-term cost in terms of lost sales and operational inefficiency is hard to quantify, Sonic did recognize $10 million in pre-tax income from cyber insurance proceeds in its Q2 2025 results, which helped offset some of the immediate costs. But this incident starkly highlighted the critical operational risk of relying on a single third-party vendor for mission-critical IT infrastructure across such a vast network. Beyond that cyber attack, macroeconomic pressures have been a significant and pervasive headwind. The aggressive series of interest rate hikes initiated by the Federal Reserve has had a dual and compounding impact on the auto industry. First, it directly increases the company's floor plan interest expense, which notably was $18.3 million in Q2 2025. That eats directly into their margins. Mm-hmm. Second, and more significantly for consumers, it has driven up auto loan rates, severely impacting vehicle affordability and consequently dampening overall consumer demand for both new and used vehicles.
Higher rates hitting them from both sides.
Pretty much. Additionally, persistent inflation has affected every facet of the business by increasing operational costs. Labor wages, parts acquisition, rising utility expenses, everything costs more. While the unique supply-demand dynamics of 2021-2022 allowed dealers to expand markups and absorb some of these cost increases, this pricing power has largely eroded as the market has normalized. However, Sonic's recent success in improving its SG&A to gross profit ratio to 68.5% in Q2 2025, down from 72.9% in the prior year, indicates a focused and effective effort to manage these inflationary pressures and improve cost leverage. They are fighting back on costs.
Controlling what they can control.
Exactly. We've also observed significant margin compression and shifts in consumer behavior. The record high vehicle gross profit margins of the pandemic era have been rapidly unwinding as vehicle production has recovered and competition intensified. In Q2 2025, Sonic's same-store new vehicle GPU fell by 6% year-over-year, and we expect this trend to continue as inventory rebuilds. Furthermore, broader economic uncertainty, affordability issues, and higher interest rates are hitting the used vehicle market particularly hard. Sonic's same-store used vehicle unit sales volume declined by 4% in Q2 2025, a trend the company attributed directly to inventory shortages and affordability issues.
Used car sales slowing down, too.
Yeah, that challenge is particularly acute for the volume-dependent EchoPark model, highlighting the importance of its strategic pivot. And finally, as we discussed, the most significant strategic pivot during this period has been the recalibration of the EchoPark strategy. The company has moved decisively away from a strategy of rapid, nationwide expansion that proved unsustainable to a more disciplined approach focused rigorously on achieving profitability within its existing footprint. This shift, while costly in the short term, as reflected in that Q2 2025 impairment charge, is fundamentally designed for long-term sustainability and value creation for the EchoPark brand.
In an industry with so much competition, external pressures, and inherent cyclicality, what truly gives Sonic its edge? What are their real strengths, the things that create a durable competitive advantage, a moat that protects their business and allows them to thrive when others might struggle?
Right, the moat. Sonic's sustainable success fundamentally relies on a combination of durable competitive advantages and superior operational execution, which together create a powerful competitive moat. First, and arguably their most significant advantage, is their luxury brand concentration. Their deep and increasing focus on premium brands like BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and now their expanded presence with Jaguar Land Rover, attracts a wealthier, often more resilient customer base. These brands command higher transaction prices and gross profits, and critically, they generate a substantial and highly recurring stream of high-margin service revenue.
Back to the service revenue from luxury owners.
Always. The strong brand loyalty and premium service expectations associated with these marks foster stickier customer relationships compared to mass-market brands, making their customers more likely to return for service in future purchases. Secondly, the scale and profitability of fixed operations is an incredibly powerful and defensible moat. As we discussed, in 2024, fixed operations contributed a remarkable 42% of the company's total gross profit from just 13% of its revenue. Huge margin contribution.
That 42% number is just staggering.
It really highlights its importance. As vehicles become increasingly complex with advanced electronics, sophisticated safety systems, and the shift towards electric powertrains, the specialized diagnostic tools, equipment, and highly trained technician expertise required for proper service create very high barriers to entry for independent repair shops.
Harder for the local mechanic to fix these new cars.
Much harder. This complex landscape strongly positions the franchise dealer as the preferred, if not exclusive, service provider for these modern vehicles, ensuring a stable, high-margin revenue stream that is significantly less sensitive to economic cycles than the more volatile vehicle sales. And finally, the EchoPark brand proposition, if its turnaround proves successful and sustainable, could become a truly significant competitive advantage. By establishing a nationally recognized standalone brand specifically for used vehicles, one built on transparency, a low-hassle experience, and a positive customer journey, Sonic can profoundly differentiate itself.
If they can make EchoPark really work nationally.
That's the key. Differentiate itself from competitors that simply sell used vehicles under their primary corporate or diversified dealership banner. EchoPark has even earned accolades, being ranked as the #1 used car buying experience in America, indicating strong potential for building lasting brand equity and customer loyalty in a segment ripe for disruption.
So it's not just about what they sell, but how they run the business, how they manage costs, and how they treat their customers. Mm. That sounds like where the operational efficiency and dedication to customer experience really come into play.
Precisely. Effective cost control is absolutely critical in a business with relatively thin net margins, and Sonic has demonstrably shown a strong focus on operational efficiency and disciplined cost management. In Q2 2025, their selling, general, and administrative SG&A expense as a percentage of gross profit improved markedly to 68.5%, down from 72.9% in the prior year period.
Getting more efficient, keeping costs down relative to profit.
Exactly. This improvement is a clear indicator that the company is successfully leveraging its fixed cost base as its high-margin revenue streams grow, which is a key driver of bottom-line profitability and financial leverage. They also maintain disciplined inventory management, with that lean 35-day supply of used vehicles at their franchise stores as of mid-2025. This discipline minimizes their exposure to vehicle price volatility and significantly reduces inventory carrying costs, directly contributing to profitability, especially in a rising interest rate environment. Furthermore, Sonic has strategically made customer satisfaction and brand strength a central pillar of its corporate strategy. They are explicitly aiming to address long-standing consumer pain points in the traditional car buying process.
Trying to fix the stuff people hate about buying cars.
That's the goal. Initiatives such as a one-person sales process, where a single experience guide handles the entire transaction from start to finish, removing the back-and-forth transparent pricing models, and a laser focus on reducing transaction times to under an hour. All meticulously designed to build trust, foster loyalty, and create a positive brand association. While specific customer satisfaction index scores aren't widely disclosed, this strategic emphasis on improving the guest journey is a crucial element of building robust brand strength and effectively defending against both traditional and digital native competitors who promise a better experience. And finally, the technology and digital investments are also a clear competitive advantage. The company has made substantial and strategic investments in technology, unequivocally viewing its IT capabilities as a competitive advantage rather than just a simple cost center.
Tech as a weapon, not just a cost.
Right. This includes the development of proprietary in-store applications that streamline and guide the sales process, making it more efficient for both the customer and the sales team. It also encompasses the creation of that sophisticated, award-winning omnichannel platform for EchoPark, which provides a seamless online-to-offline experience. Recent investments in back-office systems for functions like invoice automation further underscore a deep commitment to leveraging technology to drive efficiency and reduce manual errors across the entire enterprise. These robust digital capabilities are absolutely essential for meeting the evolving expectations of the modern consumer, who expects digital convenience, and for operating efficiently at the scale Sonic operates, thereby helping to future-proof their operations against market shifts.
Every investment has its risks. And no matter how strong the strategy, there are always potential pitfalls. What are the biggest things that could derail Sonic's journey, even with all these strengths and strategic plans in place? Where are the potential potholes ahead that they, and we as listeners, should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, the risks. This raises a truly important question for any potential investor or keen observer. What are the primary risks that could materially impact Sonic's performance and ultimately its valuation? We're talking about a blend of business, financial, operational, and strategic risks. First, the inherent business and cyclical risks. The automotive retail industry is fundamentally cyclical and highly sensitive to the health of the broader economy.
If the economy tanks, car sales usually tank too.
Exactly. As a seller of high-value discretionary goods, and with their luxury focus, even more so, Sonic's revenues and profitability are directly impacted by macro factors like GDP growth, unemployment rates, consumer confidence, and the cost of credit. An economic downturn or recession would likely lead to a significant reduction in vehicle sales and a softening of high-margin service spending. Additionally, the industry is characterized by intense competition. It's a highly fragmented market with other large public groups, thousands of independent private dealers, and a growing number of online retailers. This relentless competition creates persistent pressure on vehicle pricing, overall gross margins, and critically, the cost of acquiring new dealerships. It's a constant battle. Next, let's consider the financial risks. Sonic's business model, as we discussed, requires significant debt to finance its vehicle inventory, specifically floor plan financing. As of Q2 2025, the company reported that debt-to-equity ratio 389.5%. While this figure is common and accepted in the industry due to the nature of floor plan debt, this high leverage inherently makes the company's earnings sensitive to fluctuations in interest rates. Higher rates directly increase inventory carrying costs and overall interest expense.
So rising rates hurt their bottom line directly.
They do. There's also a significant asset impairment risk. The company carries a substantial amount of goodwill and intangible assets on its balance sheet related to past acquisitions, as dramatically demonstrated by the $172.4 million impairment charge in Q2 2025 related to EchoPark assets. If the performance of these assets deteriorates further below management's expectations, the company may be forced to recognize additional non-cash charges.
More write-downs are possible if things don't go well.
It's definitely a risk. These charges, while non-cash, negatively impact GAAP net income and reduce shareholder equity, signaling potential overvaluation of past investments. Then we delve into the operational risks. Sonic's success is inextricably linked to the success, product cycles, and brand appeal of the automotive brands it represents, particularly its key luxury partners like BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and now Jaguar Land Rover. Any adverse changes to its franchise agreements, a significant decline in a specific manufacturer's brand appeal, production disruptions due to supply chain issues, or unfavorable changes in vehicle allocation policies from the manufacturers could have a material negative impact on Sonic's operations and profitability. They depend heavily on those brands.
If BMW stumbles, Sonic feels it.
Big time. And as we just saw with the CDK Global incident, there's a critical vulnerability tied to third-party technology dependence. The June 2024 cyber attack starkly exposed that reliance on a single dominant vendor for its core dealer management system creates a significant single point of failure. A prolonged outage of such a mission-critical system can severely disrupt all facets of the business, from front-end sales and customer service to back-office accounting and payroll. It was a wake-up call for the industry. Finally, we have the strategic risks. The turnaround and long-term success of the EchoPark segment remains a significant uncertainty and a major point of focus. After substantial capital investment and a recent strategic pivot that involved painful closures, failure to achieve sustained profitability and scalable unit volume growth would represent a major strategic setback. It could lead to further impairments or a reevaluation of the entire EchoPark strategy.
EchoPark is still a big question mark, then.
A very big one. Additionally, the company's growth by acquisition strategy inherently carries acquisition integration risk. This includes various challenges such as overpaying for new assets, failing to achieve anticipated operational synergies from combining businesses, or significant cultural clashes between the acquired organizations and Sonic's existing operations. Any of these could lead to a failure to generate the expected return on investment from those newly acquired properties, effectively destroying shareholder value. Integrating acquisitions is hard work.
So knowing all this about Sonic, its strengths, its challenges, its unique barbell business model, and its ongoing transformations like the EchoPark turnaround, what does the market currently think it's worth? How do we as informed listeners value a company with such a unique mix of businesses and these significant ongoing strategic shifts?
Yeah, valuation. It presents a complex and nuanced picture with different metrics suggesting varying conclusions relative to its publicly traded peers. The unique business mix, the recent gap loss driven by that significant impairment charge, and the ongoing high-stakes EchoPark turnaround all contribute to this complexity and the market's current perception. When we look at a peer group valuation comparison using trailing 12-month metrics, we see some interesting dynamics that warrant a deeper look. Sonic's market cap is around $2.93 billion, and its enterprise value, which includes debt, stands at $5.16 billion. Smaller than peers like AutoNation or Penske, reflecting its more focused scale. Its price-to-earnings PE ratio on a trailing 12-month basis is 10.00, which is slightly below its peer group, which ranges from 11.37 to 11.96.
PE is slightly lower.
Yeah.
But you said that's skewed by the impairment charge.
Exactly. For you, the listener, this might initially suggest a modest earnings-based discount. However, it's absolutely critical to remember that this trailing PE figure is heavily influenced and artificially depressed by that large impairment charge recognized in Q2 2025. So take it with a grain of salt.
Okay, so PE is tricky. What about other ratios, like price to sales?
Right. On a price to sales PS basis, Sonic appears significantly undervalued relative to its peers. Its PS ratio is 0.17, compared to a range of 0.24 to 0.37 for the others in its peer group.
0.17. That seems really low compared to the others.
It does. For you, the listener, this could imply that the market perceives lower long-term profit margins or a higher risk associated with Sonic's revenue streams, perhaps due to the cyclicality of vehicle sales. However, when we account for debt and look at enterprise value to EBITDA, a common metric that often gives a clearer picture for capital-intensive businesses, Sonic's multiple of 10.32 is actually at the higher end of the peer group, which ranges from 8.0 to 9.93.
Wait, so EBITDA is higher than peers? That's the opposite of PS.
Exactly. This is crucial. It suggests that when debt is factored into the company's total value, its core operational earnings are not necessarily being discounted. In fact, on this basis, they are valued comparably or even slightly higher than some of their peers, which is a very different story than what the PS might initially imply. This highlights the importance of using multiple valuation lenses. You can't just pick one. Beyond these comparative multiples, it's also absolutely essential to consider historical and asset-based factors when valuing Sonic. Comparing current valuation multiples to Sonic's own 5-year historical averages would be necessary to determine if the stock is trading at a premium or discount to its own past levels, giving a sense of market sentiment. Furthermore, an asset-based valuation perspective is highly relevant and often overlooked in this industry. Automotive dealerships, particularly the franchised ones, own a significant amount of valuable real estate.
Right. The land the dealerships sit on must be worth a lot.
Exactly. Industry analysis indicates that rising real estate values have provided a strong underpin to total dealership enterprise values, essentially acting as a tangible asset floor. Even as the intangible blue sky value of franchises, that's essentially the premium paid for the future earnings potential and goodwill of a dealership, over and above the value of its physical assets like real estate, vehicles, and parts inventory, has moderated from its post-pandemic peaks. This substantial, tangible asset base, primarily in real estate, provides a crucial degree of downside protection to the valuation that may not be fully captured by traditional earnings-based multiples alone. Given Sonic's distinct and often disparate operating segments, a sum of the parts SOTP analysis is a potentially very valuable framework for a discerning investor.
Sum of the parts, valuing each piece separately.
Exactly. This approach would involve valuing each segment independently, recognizing their different business models and growth profiles. The franchise dealerships, as a mature, cash-generating segment with stable fixed operations, could be valued using multiples from its direct public peers like AutoNation or Group One. The EcoPark segment, which is more akin to a growth-oriented used car specialty retailer with a tech focus, could be valued against pure-play used car retailers like CarMax, albeit likely with a significant discount to reflect its smaller scale and ongoing turnaround. However, its recent shift to positive adjusted EBITDA suggests it could now command a multiple based on that metric, which it couldn't previously, implying an inflection point.
So EcoPark might be worth more now than it was a year ago, even with the write-down.
Potentially, yes, if you believe the turnaround is real. And the power sports segment, being a niche market, would be valued against publicly traded power sports retailers. An SOTP analysis could reveal that the market is currently ascribing little to no value to the EcoPark segment due to its history of losses and recent impairment charge, effectively bundling it with the rest of the business. If the turnaround proves successful and sustainable, this could unlock significant hidden value not currently reflected in the consolidated stock price as the market re-rates its growth prospects. So in synthesis, Sonic Automotive's current valuation appears to reflect a market that is cautiously optimistic, but still pricing in significant execution risk. The PE ratio, while impacted by one-time charges, is not demanding, and the PS ratio is notably low, suggesting the market may not be giving full credit for the company's current revenue base. However, the higher EBITDA multiple indicates that the market is quite aware of the company's debt load, but also recognizes its operational cash flow. The core investment question, ultimately for you, the listener, is whether the potential upside from a successful EcoPark turnaround and the smooth, value-accretive integration of the JLR acquisition outweighs the inherent risks of the company's ambitious barbell strategy and the cyclical nature of the industry. The substantial tangible asset base, primarily in valuable real estate, does provide a degree of valuation support that should not be overlooked, offering some inherent downside protection.
This has been an incredibly detailed and illuminating deep dive. But to bring it all home, for you, the listener, what are the most critical factors and questions to keep in mind as you think about Sonic Automotive going forward? What should you focus on to track their future performance and how they navigate this ongoing industry transformation?
Right, the takeaways. This brings us to the most crucial takeaways for your own deep dive into Sonic Automotive. First, the critical factors for their future performance are paramount. The EcoPark inflection point is the single most important variable to monitor. Can management sustain the recent positive adjusted EBITDA performance while simultaneously re-accelerating unit volume growth? A failure to do so would validate the market's skepticism and could lead to further value destruction, while continued success could lead to a significant re-rating of the company's growth prospects and overall valuation. It's huge.
Keep a close eye on EcoPark's results.
Absolutely. Second, the integration of JLR assets is crucial. Do these newly acquired high-volume stores truly deliver the projected $500 million in revenue and contribute positively to overall margins and profitability? Or do integration challenges lead to underperformance or a drag on resources? Third, watch the resilience of high-margin segments. Can fixed operations and F&I continue their strong growth trajectory driven by technician additions and favorable contract renegotiations? Any slowdown in these high-margin stable areas would significantly pressure overall profitability, especially if vehicle margins remain compressed in a competitive market. As for positioning for industry transformation, ask yourself, is Sonic's sophisticated omni-channel strategy with its improved in-store experience and the award-winning EcoPark digital platform a durable and effective long-term defense against the increasing encroachment of direct-to-consumer sales models and pure-play online retailers? Can it truly create a seamless experience that pure online players cannot replicate?
Is their tech good enough to compete?
That's the question. Also, how is Sonic specifically preparing its highly profitable fixed operations business for the widespread adoption of electric vehicles? EVs have fewer moving parts, require different maintenance protocols, and have potentially lower long-term service requirements compared to internal combustion engine vehicles. A clear, well-funded strategy for investing in EV technician training, specialized equipment, and battery service capabilities is absolutely essential for preserving and growing their long-term service revenue. That's a big unknown for all dealers. To summarize the key risks that you should remain vigilant about, a significant macroeconomic downturn or sustained high interest rates would severely depress demand for Sonic's luxury heavy vehicle portfolio and significantly reduce consumer spending on high margin services, directly impacting their top and bottom lines. Execution failure is a pervasive risk. The company's ambitious dual strategy for luxury franchise growth and the Echo Park used car brand turnaround is incredibly complex, and failure on either front could lead to further impairments, capital misallocation, and value destruction. And finally, a deterioration in a key manufacturer relationship, such as with BMW Group or Mercedes-Benz Group, could disrupt critical vehicle supply, impact their access to desirable inventory, and negatively affect the most profitable part of their business. What's truly fascinating here, as a final thought, is that Sonic Automotive is not currently trading at a demanding valuation on several key metrics, which might fairly reflect the significant execution risk associated with the Echo Park turnaround and its ongoing capital investments. However, this also implies that if the turnaround is successful, if Echo Park achieves sustained profitability and scale, and if the JLR acquisition integrates smoothly and accretively, there could be considerable upside potential in the stock. And don't overlook the substantial tangible asset base, primarily in valuable real estate holdings, which provides important underlying valuation support and a degree of downside protection that pure-play digital competitors do not possess.
So, as you can see from this deep dive, Sonic Automotive is a company navigating incredibly complex currents, masterfully balancing its traditional proven strengths with ambitious high-stakes new ventures. It's a truly fascinating case study in how a major player in a foundational industry like automotive retail adapts to profound disruption and actively seeks new avenues for growth and profitability. What truly stands out to you from this deep dive? Perhaps it's the surprising and critical profitability of fixed operations, or the high-stakes, dramatic turnaround of the Echo Park brand, or maybe the unexpected and widespread impact of a cyberattack on a third-party vendor. We sincerely hope this deep dive has given you a definitive shortcut to being truly well-informed, not just about Sonic Automotive, but about the strategic complexities and hidden drivers of the entire automotive retail sector. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep digging for those nuggets of knowledge that truly matter.